My name's Lotto. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober. Thanks, Sam, for asking me to come out. My sobriety date's January 6th of 2010. My home group is a Common Solution group. We meet at 7:30 in Charlottesville. If you're in town on Thursday, please come join us. And I have a sponsor, and I've had the privilege to sponsor other men in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, just jumping right into it, I grew up as a shy, pretty shy kid, and I did not really break out of my shell until I started drinking. And basically, the way it started for me is I started getting in trouble. So I had a couple friends, and we decided that we wanted to run around and break stuff and burn stuff and all that. And I kind of acted out and got in trouble. And at a pretty young age, I got in quite a bit of trouble and got kicked out of school and had a couple pretty serious charges. And the only reason I really bring that up is because I ran around and did all that stuff. But once I really started drinking, I stopped running around and breaking stuff and burning stuff and doing all that and acting out in that way. Now, I still broke stuff and burned stuff and stole stuff, but that wasn't my sole intention anymore, right? Like, it was just a casualty of the other fun I was having. But it was kind of my first outlet, I guess, is the best way to put it. I just kind of used that to kind of get rid of whatever was going on with me. And I chased that excitement. And so, I had a pretty, I guess outside of these rooms, you know, I had an abnormal reaction to alcohol pretty early on, right? And so the way that looked for me was I had a lot of interest in it from an early age, and it was very appealing to me. And I had a lot of that social anxiety and fear and kind of unrest growing up. And the first time I really got drunk, I was out at a party on a pig farm in Iowa, and I was there with some relatives that I didn't really know, and I was at a place, and I was one of the younger kids at the party. I felt very uncomfortable, and I didn't feel like I fit in, but they had a keg, so I got nice and drunk, and I fit in just great. And I made a lot of friends, and I felt like I could talk to all the girls, and I just had a blast. And I got into a drinking contest with some older guy, and I don't know what actually happened, but my memory is that I won, and I was, you know, and I was kind of the man of the hour. And it was one of those nights that kind of, you know, went down in history for me. And at the same time, not long after this whole little contest happened, somebody tried to give me a little bit of food to eat. I got violently ill. I spent the rest of the night puking my brains out. And I was sick as a dog the next day. You know, the kind of thing where I woke up and I was starving, but I felt like if I took one bite of food, I would throw up. And I was dehydrated, and the sun was terrible, and noises were terrible, and everything was just uncomfortable. But there was no question in my mind that what happened the night before was absolutely worth whatever I was going to go through afterwards. And that's basically just that's kind of how it started for me and how it went, is that I did what I needed to or wanted to do to get that kind of feeling. And it didn't really matter what happened along the way. And I felt like all the other bumps in the road that I ran into were just par for the course. You know, you know, going through high school, after I found alcohol and going out and partying, I socially kind of blossomed, and I spent most of my time talking about the stupid things I did while I was drinking. And that became essentially my identity, is this kid that went out and got drunk and did stupid stuff. And that's what I would talk about, were all the stupid things. And, you know, we'd come into school and high five each other about how we fell down or jumped on top of the car or did this or that or the other the weekend before. And I felt like I finally fit in. I'd found my crowd. I had these friends. And especially when I was out and drunk, that was, you know, when it was only on the weekends, my whole week would hang around that. So anyway, I made it out of high school. relatively unscathed, a couple of things here and there, but again, it was nothing that I didn't feel like was worth it. Made out of high school and got the chance to go away to college, and I had already been drinking kind of relatively unrestricted. My dad's from a small foreign country, and they don't have the same drinking laws that we have, and so for him it wasn't a big deal that I was drinking at an early age, so it was kind of, they let me do whatever I was going to do. For the most part, I was pretty unrestricted. I did well enough in school through absolutely, looking back in hindsight, through no fault of my own, I did not try very hard. It just came pretty easily to me. And so I got away with a lot, and I got to do a lot while I was still at home. But for whatever reason, when I went away to school, that new level of freedom just kind of changed things for me. And that was where the kind of the next shift in my drinking happened. And I started drinking pretty almost on a daily basis. And at first it was really a social thing, and I made a ton of friends, and I went out and I partied and I met girls and I did all this stuff, and college was exciting, and sometimes I went to class, right? And so again, I was lucky where school was pretty easy, so I skated by and I didn't have to do much, and I focused pretty much all my attention and effort on going out and partying. And this is around the time I had a couple of things that started happening late in high school and early in college, and you'll see why I'm kind of going through this is because my drinking didn't last much longer than that. But late in high school, early in college, I had a couple of things that I ran into where I would, you know, I'd go out and I'd get too drunk and something stupid would happen and I would regret what happened and I'd be remorseful for a short period of time, and then I'd just kind of drink over it. And what started happening to me early in college was that I started to kind of get this bigger and bigger separation between the way I felt drunk and the way I felt sober. And what happened really was that I started to realize, you know, if I was sober for long enough, I would start to realize the way that I treated people, the way that I was wasting the opportunities that were handed to me on a, you know, on a silver platter pretty much. And I was, you know, plotting a course to be the drunk guy on your couch, right, that had all the opportunities and squandered them. And that was kind of the direction I was going in, you know, if I made it that long. And we had, just to give you kind of a picture of what it was like, I mean, I would frequently drink, you know, just chug vodka before we'd even go out to start drinking. And we had a poster on the door in the dorm room my freshman year that said, you know, we're going to drink till we can't feel our feelings anymore. I think that was the only thing that we had on the wall in the whole room, was just about getting drunk. And the next place I lived in, we covered the entire, every inch of the walls all the way around with like old cases of beer. So basically like everything we did was kind of, surrounded in drinking. And at one point, I think early in my college career, a guy who I've since kind of stayed in touch with, he figured out that, you know, he didn't need to drink as much and calm down. And he was a heavy drinker, and he figured out that that wasn't working for him. And he turned things around, and I went the other direction and kind of kept ripping and roaring. But, you know, we're still in touch today and good friends. But at one point, you know, we for whatever reason, we took a look. We decided someday that we thought maybe we had drinking problems or something, and we talked. We came up and we talked to each other about it. And we thought, you know, do you think maybe we're alcoholics? And at the time, my best recollection is that I was pretty sure I was, but I didn't really know what it meant to be an alcoholic. And at the time, what that meant to me was there's two kinds of alcoholics. There was me. There was a young alcoholic, and what that meant was that I could drink more than you. And I was more fun than you were. And that was what I meant to be a young alcoholic. The only bad part about that is that eventually I would become an older alcoholic, and I'd be the guy with the trench coat and the drinks and the brown paper bags and all that stuff. But luckily for me, my kind of trajectory and life plan didn't include getting older, really. I mean, I was going to flame out and be done pretty much. That was the way it was going for me. And so I didn't really worry about that part too much and just kind of kept going the way I was going. And I had a lot of, instances where I just treated people in ways that were incredibly selfish. And I could sit here and tell you hundreds of stories of all the ways that I was like a total jerk to lots and lots of people while I was drunk. But I think the ones that gave the best kind of example of the way that I treated people and the way that I cared about anybody else other than myself were the things that I did when I was sober. And so one of them in particular was I had somebody I called, a good friend of mine, and we went out drinking one night, and you know, as was pretty common for me, I woke up the next morning, I didn't remember what happened. And I think I got woken up by a phone call. So my buddy is on the phone, and I answer the phone, and I'm still kind of in a stupor, and he tells me that he's in a hospital and that we need to go pick him up. And he spent the night there the night before, and I'm not sure what's really going on. And so I laugh at him and I hang up the phone. And I don't know if I thought he was joking or not or whatever, but I didn't really think about it. Then he called me again. I did the same thing and I hung up on him. He called me a third time and I did the same thing. I hung up on him. And he called my roommate once. My roommate jumped out of bed, got his car, and went to the hospital to go get him. I don't think I even went with him when my roommate left. And because I was too busy sleeping off the drunk from the night before. And I wasn't drunk. I wasn't impaired. I didn't have any excuse other than being selfish and self-centered, right? And that was the way I kind of, I would have told you that, like, I wanted to be a good guy. I wanted to be nice to people. I didn't mistreat people. I wasn't raised that way or any of that stuff. But when it came down to it, if you looked at the way that I treated people and the way that I acted, I was only interested in what was going to get me what I needed. And so I did a lot of that kind of stuff. And, basically for me, what ended up happening is that the cycle just kept repeating, where the stuff that I did started to wear on me. And essentially when I wasn't drunk, I felt like kind of the worst guy in the room. And I felt like I treated people poorly and I didn't deserve respect. And all these, like, my self-esteem was kind of circling the toilet, and I wasn't doing much to help it with the way that I was treating people. But the second I started drinking, I felt good about myself. I was, people were happy to see me. I thought, like, my whole perspective on life changed. And that's really what drinking did for me, is it absolutely gave me a different perspective on life. And it was long before I was, fall down drunk, that I had a different view on things. And I think the best way that I can describe it is that as my kind of quote-unquote, I mean, my problems were pretty minimal for the most part. But as my problems started to pile up, what booze did for me is that once I took that first or second drink, I was absolutely convinced that I was going to be able to figure out the solution to my problem sometime in the near future. Not tonight, because I was going to get drunk, right? But soon, it was going to be all right, and I was going to figure it out. And that was enough for me to get back, to get past whatever I thought I had going on that I was trying to get over, that I was trying to deal with or whatever. And that that relief was just what I was looking for. And that, for me, where that the first time that really stuck out to me was in Bill's story, where he talks about people, getting ready to jump off the towers of high finance and commit suicide and all that stuff. And he says he starts drinking, and his old fierce determination to win comes back. And that was it for me, is that once I started, everything was going to be good. It was all going to be okay. Any of my problems just all kind of melted away. And it was, it was long before I actually started to get drunk that those feelings came over me. And I just kind of continued to chase that and, do what I needed to do and run with the people I needed to run with to do that as often as I could. And I felt that anybody that didn't, at the time, I thought that if people weren't doing the things that I was doing, it was because they didn't know how much fun it was. They were kind of the unfortunates that just didn't get to experience the fun and excitement that I thought I was having. And along the way, like I said, a lot of stupid stuff happened. I got in trouble a couple of times, get arrested for this, that, the other thing. And the next kind of turning point for me in my drinking Well, one was the first time I kind of really took a look at my drinking, and I'll preface this kind of story with the fact that after it happened, I forgot that it had happened until after I got sober, and this was a couple of years before I got sober. But I went out one night, went drinking, somebody dropped me off at home, home safe. They leave me. I'm pretty drunk, blacked out. Apparently, I decided I wasn't done, so I left, went back out. Go eat some food somewhere, leave without paying, and stumbling home at something like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, and I get picked up for a drunk in public, spend the night in jail. I think I was 18 or something, and somehow I get caught, and the next morning I come home and I realize that I can't control the amount that I take once I get started. I don't know what's going to happen. I start drinking. I can't tell you if I'm going to have one or two or 15. And so this kind of hit me like a ton of bricks at the time. And I swear I literally sat there and told my parents in tears, like, I can't drink safely. I got to stop. You know, I have to quit. And I meant it with every fiber of my being. And I don't know if it was like a day later, a week later, a month later, I started drinking. But like I said, it was a couple years later after I got sober that I remember that I even swore to myself that I would stop. So I just pushed that aside and kind of went back to doing what I was going to do. And so anyway, more of that kind of stuff happened too. But where things kind of really ramped up for me, which I think might have been the reason why I ended up here as soon as I did, is there was a big event that happened at the school that I was going to, that was not very easy to deal with. And I chose to drink over it basically. And so I just kind of drank around the clock for a couple months. And what ended up happening was that, like, I would wake up in the morning pretty much every morning. A number of people died, and I would wake up in the morning, and I would say, if only it was me instead of one of those people, the world would have been a better place. And that's how I would have felt every morning, because I was just kind of aiming for being the bum on the couch that so far had all these things handed to him. And so I'd wake up with those feelings, but like I said, that the drink would solve all that for me. So I'd start drinking or chasing something, and all that would go away. So I did that kind of around the clock for, I don't know, it was 1 or 2 months or something. And that was up till then. That was probably the longest bender that I went on. I got a chance to go, you know, people were still giving me opportunities to do a couple of things. I got a chance to go back to this really prestigious kind of internship opportunity that I had, and spent the whole summer drinking and working, and at the end of summer, started to realize that I needed to quit. So I tried to stop drinking. And essentially what happened for me is that I had what I think was some sort of, like, extreme or kind of, I don't know, some sort of withdrawals, right, which ended up with me being in a psych ward thinking that all sorts of crazy stuff, that it could be a whole nother story that for, like, 5 hours to explain to you all the crazy things I thought at the time. But essentially I was totally detached from reality, ended up in a psych ward, tried to kill myself. And where that comes in really, is that after I got out of there, I went to see a couple doctors and they tried to figure out what was going on with me and what the cause was. And they thought maybe something I did or took or whatever might've set me off or something like that. But at the end of the day, what really happened is that I went through that, which was all of it was pretty much in my head, but it was the worst thing that I've been through in my life, because there was no way for me to differentiate that, the true from the false in that situation, because I was so delusional. And so it was kind of the worst thing that, I mean, to date, it's the worst thing I've ever been through. And the doctor said, if you probably have a drinking problem, or some kind of problem with drugs or something like that. Like, you probably shouldn't do that stuff anyway as much as you do. But just in case that wasn't enough, if you drink or do these other things again, you're probably going to end up in the same situation again. So maybe you should stop. Yeah. And they were like, you should probably go to AA and do these other things. And I elected not to go to AA. at the time. I think I visited once and just kind of thought, well, that's nice for those people that need it, and maybe someday I will. I just got out of, you know, two psych wards and wasn't doing so hot, but maybe someday I would need AA. And so anyway, I visit a little bit, I leave, but where that really came in is the second part of alcoholism, right, that I figured out when I got here. You know, outside of the physical part, when I started drinking, I didn't know what was going to happen. But what happened next is that I had the biggest reason I'd ever had to never drink again, and I meant it. And just the same thing that happened when I was younger, when I swore I wasn't going to pick up again, is that at some point a switch flipped in my head, and it was a good idea to drink again. And it always happened. For me, in my experience, every single time I had a good reason not to drink again, every single time I drank again. The last time I got drunk, I didn't really get any new good reasons not to drink again. It was an uneventful experience. You know, it was a rare occasion, but it was. And it was just kind of circumstance that I ended up getting sober then. But, you know, that part's the reason why I still go to meetings today. You know, I haven't had that phenomenon of craving from the first drink in a while now. But my head will still tell me that I don't need the things that are good for me, right? That I can do things the way that I want to do them. And so that's why, you know, I come places like this on a Sunday night instead of doing, you know, laying on the couch or doing whatever I might do otherwise. And so that was kind of, this was the beginning of my kind of merry-go-round. So for the next kind of 2 years or 2 or 3 years after that, I'd visit AA for a little bit, stay sober for a little bit, leave, kind of do the same thing, visit a couple hospitals, this and that, and kind of rinse and repeat. And I never got, well, I had a sponsor at one point, but I never really worked the steps with them. I never really had a home group. I was really just visiting AA, you know. I'd come in for a little bit, and I'd disappear, and I'd show up for a little bit, and then I'd disappear for long stretches of time in between. And essentially what happened for me is that I got a DUI, and the court told me that I needed to go to meetings or else I would go to jail for longer, and I didn't want to do that. So I went to some meetings, and at this point I wasn't sure that I was ready to stop drinking, honestly. I mean, I came in AA because I had a suspended sentence and I was on probation, and I didn't want to violate probation and go serve my sentence. And so that's why I showed up. And like, it was just the right kind of combination of what was going on in my life that I had another kind of window of grace. And I think I had had a few before and I turned them down. You know, I had a couple opportunities before that that I probably, if I had stuck around here, if I had gotten a sponsor, gotten in the steps, you know, maybe I would have stayed earlier. I got the experience that I needed, I think, for me, but I had a window of grace at that point, and I can't even say that I took it, to be honest. I mean, what happened to me at that time is that I was just miserable enough that I ended up in a group of Alcoholics Anonymous that was active, that was in the steps, that was in the book, and somebody threw me in the back of their car. And then the next thing I knew, I was going to meetings with them, you know, 7 days a week. And I still wasn't done with my outpatient rehab. I didn't have my driver's license back because they told me they were going to put a breathalyzer in my car. And I was smart enough to know that if I had a breathalyzer in my car, I was going to get a DUI. So I turned in my driver's license rather than put a breathalyzer in my car, because I figured if I don't drive, that solves that problem. I'm going to keep drinking, doing the things that I want to do. And so I came into AA, couldn't drive, didn't have a license because I forfeited it gladly to be able to do the stuff that I wanted to do. And anyway, so it made me, I had to set up rides with people, and I had to make plans ahead of time. I had to be on the phone, and I had to get to meetings. But ultimately it was just again, this was one of the things that was through literally no fault of my own. I ended up in a spot where I was just miserable enough to listen to somebody else. And the way that worked out for me is that, like, I came here and I was, you know, I was so painfully shy and afraid of people. And, you know, I could not look people in the eye. I would shake and cry and be afraid. And it was, and life was just overwhelming, you know. And what happened to me is that I had this kind of inkling of an idea that I didn't really know what was going on here yet. I'd been around enough that I could quote a couple of things out of the book and make it sound like, you know, if you hadn't been here for more than a week, it might sound like I might know something. But what really happened is that I started to see something was different from these people, and I'd hear people telling these same kind of stories that I'm telling you tonight about how they ended up here and how it changed and what happened. And I started to get this, like, the first thing for me was just maybe if I do what these people are doing, I could be able to walk up to somebody and shake their hand and introduce myself. Maybe I can feel comfortable in my own skin. Maybe I can not have to take that drink because I become so incredibly uncomfortable that there's no other option. And so for me, that's what it ended up, like, the first thing that I did with a sponsor was to really understand what it meant to be an alcoholic, because I had a lot of bad information. And what that ended up meaning for me outside of those kind of two factors that I talked about was that when I said I was an alcoholic, it meant that I was going to drink again. If I'm running the show, I will drink again, period. End of story. And the reason that is because I live my life in such a way that I can't bear it. I cannot bear to live my life the way that I want to live it on my own without taking a drink. And I need that relief. And what I found here over a period of time is I get some of that relief, but I also learn a new way of life. So I don't need to chase the bottle, right? I don't need to have that instant fix. I don't need to have to feel like everything's going to be okay someday when I figure it out, right? And so the next thing that my sponsor did after he kind of talked to me about what it meant to be an alcoholic is we got to the second step, right? He was, you know, he came into AA and he was very anti, like, organized religion and all of that. And so I was raised going to a church, and I don't know that I really had all that much against it. I just thought it didn't work for me and I was doing my thing, and I just turned my back on the idea of it. I really relate to where it talks about in the 12 and 12, having the kind of, the list for Santa Claus, you know, having these things, you know, these like, this wish list of things that I want from this idea of a God. And then when they didn't show up, these ludicrous requests, then I figured, well, you know, either there isn't a God or he doesn't care or it's not doing anything for me, so why do I care? And so, you know, I wasn't belligerently anti-religious or anything like that. I just didn't really care. It wasn't something that was really on my radar. But anyway, my sponsor had that experience, so he was kind of slick about the way he went about it, right? And so really all we talked about was being open-minded, right? Having this idea that there was something here that was working for other people, and having this idea that maybe the way that I was running the show wasn't working. And those two things were pretty easy to kind of admit to, right? And so where it talks about in the big book, like, do you now believe or are you willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself? And it was clear to me that there was something going on with the other people in meetings that were allowing them to stay sober when they said they couldn't do it on their own before then. And I knew for me at that point that everything else I had tried, I was unable to stay sober for any length of time without being entirely miserable. And so kind of moving out from that into the third step, my first sponsor really harped on this idea of kind of playing the role that I'm assigned in whatever situation I'm in instead of trying to be the director, right? So what that kind of boiled down to was, you know, being a son with my family and being a worker when I'm at work. And I was going back to school when I got sober, and it meant that I was going to be a student, which meant, like, I had to go to class, and I had to study, and I had to ask questions, and I had to do my homework. And when I went to work, it meant that I had to clock in for the hours that I was there and work while I was there and pay attention and not use company time to go, you know, disappear and you know, enjoy some other dry goods or stuff like that, right? So it meant that I had to do what I was supposed to do, right? I had to follow through on the on my responsibilities, and so that started. And the way that worked for me is I watched these guys. You know, I watched the way that they showed up for their family. I watched the way that they brought flowers to their moms every Mother's Day. I watched the way that they wrote letters, or they did whichever way their circumstances kind of ended up. I watched the way that they showed up for these responsibilities in their lives, and I started to try to do the same thing. And that was the beginning of my third step, was to start just playing the role that I was assigned. And the second part of it really was this, was so kind of for me to simplify it, there was this idea that, you know, maybe there was some sort of God, and I wasn't sure really what that was at the time. And I was still trying to figure that out. I was, you know, kind of experimenting with different kinds of prayer and things like that, and didn't really know if it was helping or doing anything, but people told me that I should just do it and see what happened. And I was desperate enough that I was going to do that. But what I did, what was kind of clear to me was that there was something here that was working, and at a bare minimum, this was kind of AA, and the ideas behind AA were kind of like they were some part of my higher power, right? So if I was going to turn over my will and my life to that, the obvious next thing to do would be to follow through on this plan of action that we have here in AA and do a four step. And so that was kind of the first tangible evidence of having followed through on a third step, is to actually write a four step. And I promptly did not do that, right? So I showed up in meetings, and my sponsor told me to start writing, and I even got a notebook and put a pen on it and put it on my desk. And I got in bed every night, you know, after I came home from a meeting, and I would think about all these people's names that should end up on that list. And I'd sit there in bed and I'd go over them. And then the next night I'd go over the same names and I'd think about them over and over and over again. And I don't know, it was maybe a month or two later. My first home group was Midtown, with a really large young meeting, lots of stuff going on, and somebody was having a birthday party at a frozen yogurt place, and a friend of mine dragged me there, unbeknownst to me, until we were already on the road. And it was a girl's birthday party, and I was still petrified of women at this point, because I felt so bad about the way that I treated people in my life. And then on top of that, these women in AA were trying to do something different and be, and just like everybody else, they were trying to live a better way of life, right? And that to me was incredibly intimidating. And so I was just in fear and hid and couldn't talk to any women at all or do anything. And so this idea that I was going to go to this party with all these young women was very overwhelming to me. So I got very upset with my friend who was taking me to the party. We get there, and a couple of my friends who've been sober for a while at the time, they're standing outside, and so I go and try to talk to them, and somebody asks me how I'm doing, right? Simple question. How are you doing? I cried for like 30 minutes in response to his question, right? And clearly I was not doing very good. And so all these guys, luckily, had kind of been trained. They all had a pretty good idea of why I was crying, because they all knew I was on my fourth step, and they all knew I should have been writing it, and I hadn't been. And so we talked about it, and I distinctly remember having two clear options. You know, at that point, I could either go back to doing what I knew, right, because I couldn't stand laying there and thinking about all this stuff over and over again. So I could get the relief that I knew. I could go back to drinking, and I could play that thing out again. And I knew the best it was ever going to be was some form of terrible, right? It might be a little bit better. It might be a little bit worse, but it was always going to be terrible. Or I could try and do this new thing that I'd never done before. I could write my four step and try and find out what all these people have been talking about. And And so I finished it, you know, in the next day or something. You know, I mean, it took me 2 months and a couple hours to finish my four step. And I think I did my fifth step either that weekend or the weekend after. And I think for me, what that really did, it was a, first off, it was one of the first times I sat down and I kind of let somebody know everything that all these things that I'd done and the way I treat people, and kind of opened it up and laid it out there. And started to see some of the patterns in my character defects. But also what it did is it leveled the playing field, right? I was just another bozo on the bus. I was just another garden variety drunk. I wasn't any better or any worse than my sponsor. Anything I had done, you know, if there's a name for something I've done, somebody did it before me, right? And so I'm not special. I'm not unique. I'm the same as everybody else here. And that's what it really did for me. And on top of that was it was the first, like I said, it was the first kind of concrete action that I took for my sobriety. Because up until that point, I had showed up. I'd read the book. I'd come to some meetings. But as far as the steps went, it was mostly kind of an academic kind of exercise. I had said that that I was willing to believe in a power greater than myself. And I said that I'd turn my will and my life over to something else. But until I followed through with some action, there wasn't really any proof other than what was up in my head. And so that was, for me, you know, I kind of launched full speed, you know, out of that. And I went through 6 and 7 and, you know, I think 6 and 7 have, the way my kind of approach or take or interaction or whatever you want to call it with 6 and 7 has changed from like drastically from this, you know, initial idea of just kind of like being aware of what's going on. Yes, I'm willing to get rid of all these glaring, obvious things that are ruining my life. And then to like going to the other side of being super obsessed with trying to figure out how I could be perfect and how, you know, there's all these secret intricacies of 6 and 7 and then going back and forth. So there's, I've kind of bounced around with my relationship with the 6 and 7 step. But for me at that point, what it really came down to was being willing to kind of follow through on changing the way I was living and getting ready for amends. And that for me was where the rubber met the road. Was that I could, you know, I could say I was cleaning up and changing the way I was living. I could say I was doing these things. I could say I was trying. But it wasn't until I started to go back to these people, they were like, my mettle was being tested, right? Like, was I really going to follow through on these amends? Was I really going to stop treating people the way I've been treating them? Was I really going to, you know, start being available to my family? Was I going to start just really just following through on those things. And so I went, the first two amends I made were just to some college roommates that I had. One of those guys, one of them was the guy that was in the hospital that I ignored all his calls and did a number of other things that weren't, you know, particularly pleasant to the guy. And I can say the process of formally making amends to those two guys was pretty uneventful. You know, they were young too. They had seen a change in me. I was no longer rotating through hospitals and psych wards. And so for them, I was not actively ruining their, like being a pain or potentially ruining their life. And I seemed to be better. I seemed to be less in like a state of turmoil. So from their point of view, you know, water under the bridge, we're good. Glad things are going better. But the real kind of transformation for me came from a friend, like was realized from a friend of mine who came. So a friend of mine from AA came with me down to go make amends to these two guys. And when we came back up, like in hindsight, he realized like a shift, and it wasn't anything I did, but he realized a shift in the way that I started to interact with people and the way that I was approaching like different relationships in my life and that sort of thing. And so the only thing I can really attest that to is the fact that at this point it started to really seem real. Like I couldn't just keep making these empty promises like I'd always been doing. I couldn't just keep being like, well, you knew I was a drunk and I do all these stupid things. So what would you expect me to do other than the same thing I've always done? And I would go back and forth between that and, you know, trying to have some, mumbling excuse for an apology. And so this was the first time that it felt like it was different. And, so I continued and made a couple other amends and I guess for me, one thing that's kind of important to touch on for me is that at the time, something that was really helpful for me just in general in AA was to be really plugged in. And I had, I was going to a lot of meetings and I had a lot of service commitments, and I basically made it very inconvenient for myself to disappear. You know, I was talking to a lot of people. I was making coffee. I was showing up early. And people expected me to be certain places. And so if I was going to disappear, I knew that, you know, that I would leave somebody on Tuesday without coffee being made, or I might disappear with a key to the church. And those kind of things, even when I had the brief periods of time where I might have thought of doing something else, when I had those things that kind of kept me plugged in and kept me a part of the group, those made sure that I was going to show up. And the other side of that was that getting into those like first kind of forms of service were absolutely instrumental to me to start to become a part of here. And so when I in addition to finishing a fifth step and feeling like I fit in and feeling like I was a part of this thing, you know, being a part of setting up the meeting and making sure that I would help out with events or doing certain things like that, that was what, you know, really made me feel like I was a part of. And on top of that, that whole thing with being incredibly shy and introvert and all that, you know, I had my first home group was a couple hundred people, and I got thrown in the greeting line and I had to shake everybody's hand as they walked in. And that forced me to get out of my comfort zone and be willing to talk to people. And then when I would show up, when somebody would drag me along and show up before the meeting and make coffee, it forced me to start build these relationships outside of the meeting, and start to have these kind of connections with people and build that kind of fellowship, that was, you know, that was and continues to be, really important, even though, at times I do, you know, my ability to kind of stay consistent on that has definitely waxed and waned over the years. But anyway, getting back to a couple other amends that were important, that like were really kind of big. The main one for me, I didn't have a whole lot of major stuff on my amends list. Some people say like, you know, I was not very good at being bad, right? So I didn't do a whole lot. I was mostly, the damage that I did was to the people closest to me and stealing their peace of mind and stealing some of their money too. But mostly their peace of mind and stealing my parents' ability to be able to talk to their, you know, to their friends about how their kids are doing, you know. It just had to be something that, you know, I can guarantee they didn't really want to talk about how Lotta was doing for a while. Because it wasn't looking that good. And so, I guess two other ones that were kind of big for me. One was big, and the other one I just thought was kind of cool and didn't happen all that long ago. But one was the events of my dad. So when I got to AA, my dad's been a pretty heavy drinker for as long as I've known him. And I used to judge him a lot for it, and he still will get lit up today, and it doesn't bother me in the same way it used to, but I really hated the man when I got here, and I lived with him when I got sober, and I did my best to ignore him or avoid him or not talk to him. So as much as you can live in the same house and not talk to somebody at all, that was what I was doing. And So what happened to me is, like I said, I started following the example of the people from my home group and starting to do these things, you know, for my family or showing up and doing the dishes at the house and helping out with certain things and things like that. And right after I got sober, I started playing soccer for the first time in a number of years with a bunch of people on a team that were, you know, from our home group. So it was a bunch of sober guys playing soccer together. And my dad had coached me when I was young, so I started inviting him and bringing him to my games. And so we still didn't get along all that well, but he would ride out with me to these games, and we would hang out for a little bit, and then I'd drive him home, and we'd talk a little bit here and there. And one day, you know, I was talking to my sponsor, and I kind of broached the subject, like, you know, when do you think is going to be a good time to make amends to my dad? And first he had to kind of stop the conversation and remind me, like, how big of a shift it was for me to even ask that, it, like, if we, you know, if it was time to start having that conversation or set up a time to do that, because I had no interest in trying to repair that relationship with my dad. I mean, I used to wait for an excuse. I mean, I never really got into physical altercations with him, but I used to wait for an excuse to hit him or do something to him because I just didn't like the guy. And so, anyway, we sit down, we go to lunch, have a conversation, and I kind of tell him what I've been doing and what I've been trying to do and all of that. And at the end of that conversation, he says, you know, whatever it is that you found there, keep doing it. It's working, right? And this is the same guy that a couple years earlier, I go to AA. I don't stay sober, but I visit for a little bit. And he says, I don't think you need to go to that thing. You can't be an alcoholic. You just have to learn how to drink right, right? You need some more training. You need to hang out with me some more. We'll teach you the right way to do it, you know. And at this point, right, he had seen that shift. And he literally said, I don't know what kind of thing you've, like, power you found there, but it's working for you, and keep doing it. And for me, that was a really big shift. And I've been able to, you know, go on trips with my dad at a couple different places, and we have a pretty good relationship today. And that's, you know, again, it's one of those things, it's through no fault of my own. I just kind of followed what people were doing here, and those things kind of fell into place. And I had another one, you know, I spent a couple summers up in Boston and I trashed this fraternity house and smashed up a window and refused to pay him back. And a number of years later, I write him a letter and send him a check in the mail. And it takes him a couple months to get back to me. And I had to, it was some weird thing to track him down. I couldn't remember exactly where it was that I had smashed the window. So it was this whole kind of detective thing. And I get a letter back from the fraternity, and they had, I don't remember exactly how much I sent them, but they had used it as kind of like as seed money for this fundraising they were doing. They had had a brother who had passed away from this certain kind of cancer, so he passed away from this certain kind of cancer, and they had used the money that I sent to set up this fundraising and try to help out. And they shared the story that I told them with the fraternity. At the end of the day, for me, it was just one of those things where I sat for, I mean, I don't know, it was probably 5 or 6 or 7 years in that I sent that check off to them, you know. And it had been 10 years or more since I broke a window, right? And all I did was do what everybody kind of told me to do, is I tried to clean up, you know, very late, tried to clean up some of the wreckage of the past. And I think, honestly, the reason I'm probably crying is because I talked about my dad, and I get a little emotional about that, and I might have held it on for a little bit longer than that. But anyway, the thing with them was moving to me, because it was just one of those things where it came full circle or anything like that, but I showed up and I did something that made a difference for other people and was able to kind of make a change in a way that I never would have done before. You know, they had to track me down and do all this stuff, and I still just flat out refused to to just pay for the thing that I broke. And instead, like, in trying to do that, they were able to kind of make it turn into some kind of good. And then ultimately, that's really, like, what's happened in AA and what I've been able to do. I do a pretty bad job of talking about what's happened since I got sober, and to a certain extent, because I leave out these really big gaps, now that I've been here for a little while. But ultimately, what it boils down to here, I think, is that, like, I did a terrible job running my life, and I did a lot of stuff that I probably shouldn't have done. And once I got here, I got the opportunity to take all that and turn around and put it to good use, right? And so I get to be able to help people that go through the same kind of things and feel, and at the end of the day, what really happens is I get to put my head down on my pillow and know that I've done the best that I can with what I got. And that idea of, like, lack of self-esteem has been replaced by the fact that I've started to take esteemable actions and treat people with respect and show up and do the things that I'm supposed to do. And as long as I continue to do that, which I don't always do, I fail plenty, right? But as long as I continue to do those things, then I get to put my head down at night and go to sleep, and I get to feel good about, you know, about what I've tried to do to clean up the stuff that I've done. And I think the big shift for me is that, you know, the vast majority of the time, like on my worst day, I just don't make anybody else's day any worse, you know. And most of the time, I try and find some little way to try and make things a little bit easier, a little bit smoother, or give somebody some kind of support if I can. And as long as I continue to do that and show up here, things seem to work out. And I don't have any more time, but I could, you know, sit here for hours and tell you about all the different, exciting, amazing kind of circumstances and things that have happened in my life as a result of sobriety. But at the end of the day, what it really comes down to is, like a little over 8 years ago, I showed up here and I had no interest in stopping drinking. And the only thing I looked for were shortcuts. And I'm still here. And the reason is that it's absolutely changed my life, and everything good and decent in my life is a direct result of the things that I learned how to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, again, you know, I'm very grateful to be here and for the opportunity to share with you guys tonight. And thanks.